Awesome job, Bella. World destroying as usual. Job.
Okay, well, it's going to be... That's literally a hard act to follow. We'll see how we do. Thank you. The rest of the day we'll do important work but not have quite that much fun. Let's move on then to item 205, please.
Adopt a new Portland Enterprise Zone and electronic commerce policy to replace existing Portland Enterprise Zone and East Portland Enterprise Zone policies.
Thank you. Well, as Chris Harder and Andy Reid come up, let me just introduce this. This is an update to our current policy, and I've had the chance to see, again, in person and talking with some companies around the city how this program is working, particularly since it was expanded into East Portland in 2012. We've seen companies invest tens of millions of dollars in outer East Portland, companies like Bridgetown Natural Foods, Leatherman Tool, Triad Machinery, and in fact, we've seen some spectacular new investments like the $50 million dry dock. Let me say that again, $50 million tool that Vigor Industrial bought to expand the capacity of our shipyard. So those are the kinds of investments that this program is intended to support, and it does indeed support, and that's why we're here to tune it up and make it work even better for the future. So I'll turn it over to you, Chris, to start the presentation. Thank you both for being here this morning.
Thank you. City Commissioners, Mayor Hales, thank you for the opportunity to present today. I'm Chris Harder, Economic Development Director at PDC. As you're aware, business development, PDC's work with local companies to provide direct and referral assistance is the foundation of our economic development strategy. Annually, my team meets with approximately 350 unique traded sector businesses, and local business vitality is key to sustained economic health as well as quality middle wage jobs. As you'll see during our presentation, the city's enterprise zone and e-commerce program is an important tool to encourage private sector investment, job creation, and job retention. It is also key to our ability to ensure strong community benefits. This request before you today is to adopt a new updated Portland Enterprise Zone and e-commerce policy. Andy Reid, my colleague, is the Enterprise Zone manager, and he'll walk through recent program benefits and impacts. I'll close with an overview of proposed policy changes, and we also do have an invited guest from one of the participant companies in our Enterprise Zone. Andy?
Good morning, Andy.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, thank you for your time. First, I'm going to give you an overview of the Enterprise Zone, how it works. The E-Zone, also known as E-Zone, is a five-year property tax abatement program where firms who are making new capital investment can receive a tax abatement. The taxes continue to get paid on existing land and equipment. You'll also notice that e-commerce, we have an e-commerce overlay, which provides a 25% tax credit on state corporate and personal income tax. It's worth noting that the e-commerce overlay has existed since the creation of the most recent zones.
Could you explain the electronic commerce a little more, please?
Yeah, so when a company makes an investment in electronic commerce activity, think online procurement, it could be as kind of traditional as Amazon.com, or it could be a back-end system to support sales and service to clients around the globe, the United States, wherever it is. So the idea is when a company makes an investment in e-commerce-related activity, it's bringing in income into the area, and products are moving out via Portland to other parts of the United States and world.
And you get a state tax credit based on the statute.
Correct. Right.
And just to add to that, so internet sales channels, not to be confused with necessarily software technology companies. Many of our manufacturers, product companies, use the internet as a sales channel. So sometimes there's a confusion about industry. It's industry agnostic.
So we currently have two enterprise zones. The original Portland Enterprise Zone in blue on the map was originally established in 1986. The most recent approval came in 2008. We have the East Portland E-Zone, which you approved in 2012, and we've seen activity increase since that time. Combined, the E-zones cover approximately 20 square miles of industrial and commercial land in Portland. Thought it'd be helpful to have a refresher of what the program requirements are for participating firms. You'll notice that companies receiving E-zone or e-commerce benefits have job creation retention requirements, along with minimum standards for wages and benefits. Each participating company is required to first sign a first source hiring agreement and submit a local procurement plan. We'll have more on the impacts of these in a minute. It's also important to highlight, as Chris mentioned, that we've got lots of different kinds of firms in the E-zone. On the screen, you'll see the current industry distribution. The program continues to be an important tool for manufacturing and distribution sectors critical for middle-wage jobs. Participating companies are also geographically dispersed. With the introduction of the East Portland E-Zone, we've seen increased activity in East Portland, which we believe is very valuable. It's worth noting that it's an important tool also for smaller traded sector businesses. Currently, 16 active E-Zone companies have less than 50 employees, approximately one-third of our participating firms.
Can I ask, what's the history behind the 150% of minimum wage standard, and what's the justification for that?
So that's a policy that we've created. I'll look to Andy for the Oregon state statute explanation. But it is a wage requirement, so they're encouraging certain levels of wage. One important thing around that level and kind of why it was selected, it's both a high enough level, it's supposed to be a high enough level to create career pathways for livable wages, but it's also at the right level that many of our entry-level positions are. So particularly in our manufacturing sector, we have entry-level positions, which may be between $12 and $14 an hour. Robin may be able to provide some insight from her company on that. Many of those positions are the starting point for what we term as career ladder opportunities, which would then pay higher wage. And we have examples of companies kind of starting with entry level, moving to the higher wage. I'll get into it later, but it's also how we focus some of our workforce training dollars to encourage that career ladder.
Now, I read somewhere that the average wage and the companies that have taken advantage of this is something like $25 an hour, right?
That's correct.
But there's no requirement that the average or median wage should be at a certain level. The only requirement is that you pay 85% of your people at least $13.88 an hour.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And is that a state law requirement, or is that our policy?
So under state law, every jurisdiction, and usually it's sponsored by a city or a county, and those jurisdictions tie the minimum wage requirements to 150% of county wages. As you can imagine, in Portland, that would push it significantly higher than in other jurisdictions where wages are lower kind of going in. So I think I looked at this a while ago, and we'd be looking at like $17 to $20 an hour of a minimum if we were tied to that. State statute has allowed Portland to be exempt from that standard, and instead we've put in place this through the policy. So that was written into legislative law a number of years ago.
So we have, the city has discretion?
Under the policy, the city does have discretion.
We want to make it $15 an hour, we could do that?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's not go there today, okay?
We do have that discretion.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not, we have parameters set by state law, but we can operate within those.
Correct. Right. So to some of the program impacts, and this one being wages, we've been experiencing in the last 3 to 4 years right around $25 an hour average wages, with another $9 an hour of benefits on top of that for employees in E-Zone companies. Obviously, that's well above the minimum requirements. As Chris alluded to, though, or spoke directly to, we have jobs that are on the lower end, and there are jobs on the higher end getting to that average. In 2013 alone, participating companies reported local procurement of nearly $60 million. And since 2009, companies have created close to 1,500 family wage jobs and have invested or committed investment of $700 million.
What is the value of the tax break then over time?
So on a, and this is just kind of general scenario, it splits out industrial commercial, but on an industrial investment of $1 million, that will create $100,000 of tax liability over 5 years. So that would be the tax savings, approximately 10% of your investment.
And so the total cost, I mean, I realize that the assumption is some of the investments would not have been made if not for the tax break, but since this was adopted, what's been the total cost to the city?
I haven't looked at the numbers recently. We could get that for you, though.
I believe total investment's about $1.2 billion since, or at least, well, I should say that's since about 2001. I think we could get you the answer to that. Mm-hmm. So why a policy change and what is new? The primary goal of the proposed policy is to better align the enterprise zone and e-commerce program with PDC's strategic plan, and in particular the draft strategic plan that we've been working with you guys on, which focuses on promoting job accessibility and widely shared prosperity. It's also to reinforce the program's ability to provide community benefits. So a couple examples of how this proposed policy does that. We are recommending that the Neighborhood Economic Development Leadership Group serve as our advisory body for the Community Contribution Fund expenditures. I'll get into a bit more on that fund. We've strengthened transit and child care support in the program by lowering the company threshold for requiring participation, as well as creating a dedicated fund.
So what that means, and it's one of my favorite parts of this, is the company has to pay for transit passes and to provide child care. So there's a lot of additional benefits that the company is required to provide in return for getting this concession.
That's correct. And we've lowered the threshold for that from a company's receiving tax abatements. It used to be $2 million down to $1 million. And then we're requiring every single company to pay into a fund to support transit and child care, whether or not their company qualifies or benefits from that.
So we would no longer be requiring individual companies to provide child care for their employees, is that correct?
Well, our goal through this fund is to first work with a company. One of the challenges we've had is child care is often determined based on median family income. That can be a very hard or difficult number to get. Employers don't always know the median family income of their employees. So by having companies pay in, if we can have a third party verify for that and work with a company, we'd like to do that directly. If not, we have resources to partner in the community with the organizations where this is their expertise, and particularly those focusing on lower income. So it allows us a bit of that flexibility.
Okay. It was my understanding that what we're doing today was replacing the company-specific child care requirements with one that requires every company to contribute 5% of their tax break to child care and transit. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
So do we have any idea what percentage of the child care costs of employees in these companies would be covered by that portion of a 5% dedication?
The policy doesn't specifically get into what percent needs to go to what. As we've contemplated it, we expect that if you look at the 5%, half of it's going to go to transit, half's going to go to child care, unless there are specific reasons why transit would be more valuable for the company or child care. The specific requirement around child care was difficult because it had a threshold of 50% of MFI. And so we, in doing our kind of administering of the program for years, haven't had a single company actually trigger that requirement. So this is a big shift in that we now are going to require every company that realizes more than $1 million in tax savings to contribute to something.
And how many companies have gotten more than $1 million in tax savings? And like in addition to that, of the total amount of tax breaks we've given out, how much has gone to companies getting over $1 million and how much less than $1 million?
Off the top of my head, I'd say approximately 10% are over $1 million or the $2 million threshold right now. Over $1 million, 25 to 30%. We can get you exact numbers on that soon.
Yeah, it's interesting as it happened. I visited two companies the last couple weeks that were in the Central East Side, and typical of the smaller firms that would be using this program, and one of them was almost all, if not entirely, women. And the other one was almost all, and if not entirely, 25-year-old men, it seemed like. So I assume that there might be a difference in those companies as to whether there was, you know, given the age and demographics of the workforce, and whether the transit or child care was more needed, because most of the young men were single.
That was my question. No, I would think 25-year-old men.
It wasn't just gender. It was status. So, you know, I assume that flexibility is going to allow the right benefit for the right company, depending on what their employees actually need.
That's correct. Couple more items. We intend to link the Enterprise Zone e-commerce program more explicitly to PDC's equity policy. Specifically, Enterprise Zone projects will adhere to PDC's updated MWESB contracting and apprenticeship requirements. And finally, we are requiring that companies utilizing the e-commerce overlay also contribute to the Community Contribution Fund. Currently, they are exempt. In addition, the policy has several administrative and technical improvements, such as Andy mentioned, we actually have two policies, one for each of the existing enterprise zones. We're bringing that into one unified policy. We're updating language to better reflect the direction of PDC's strategic plan around widely shared prosperity inclusion, as well as updating terminology that's about 20 years old since the last time we did this. As referenced on the previous slide, a key component of the program is our Community Contributions Fund. All participating companies pay 15 to 20% of their tax abatement or tax credit into the fund to support local workforce training and business development. The Neighborhood Economic Development Leadership Group will advise PDC on expenditures of this fund. Forecast expenditures over the next 5 years include the following. In partnership with WSI, we will continue supporting workforce training for pre-hires, new hires, and incumbent workers. Stronger emphasis on career ladder opportunities, as I previously mentioned, and promoting underrepresented populations. We intend to provide resources to expand PDC's inclusive entrepreneurship efforts, startup support around mentoring, access to capital and industry networking for entrepreneurs from underrepresented populations, primarily women and communities of color. Our NPI and Main Streets have accessed these funds, and traditionally those have been used for organizational capacity building, training of staff and board, as well as equity training. We anticipate similar expenditures going forward. And funds will be used to supplement technical assistance by providing access to small business resources such as the Small Business Legal Clinic, Microenterprise Service of Oregon's Market Link Program, PCC's Small Business Development Center Scholarship Program, and the Metropolitan Family Services Credit Repair Program.
First of all, thank you for an excellent presentation. I have a couple of questions. The first is remind us again, the duration of the E zone is
5 years.
5 years. So a company makes a number of commitments during those 5 years. And then what happens after the 5 years with respect to some of these goals that we've established?
After the five-year mark, we finished our reporting with the state of Oregon and local compliance, and they graduate, and on they go. We don't do any more reporting or requirements beyond that point.
We don't have a direct involvement there. Obviously, then their tax goes is no longer an abatement.
And you know, one of the things that sometimes comes up with these kinds of programs is, you know, being sure that we get the full benefit that we bargained for. So how are we doing in regards to companies that are impacted by the E-Zone meeting or exceeding the required goals?
Yeah, so when we experienced a recession, there were a handful of companies that struggled. There are mechanisms in the local policy and also in state statute that when a company doesn't meet those requirements, there are paybacks of taxes or a full disqualification potentially. So if they let everybody go, then they lose their tax abatement. And there's a five-year potential clawback. If that happens in the fifth year, they have to pay all the taxes back. So for the companies that have failed at those levels, we've probably had maybe three or four or five in the last 3 or 4 years. we've used state statute to make sure that the benefits or the taxes were paid back. I manage that along with the tax assessor's office in Business Oregon. We all do compliance together. And beyond those, everybody else has been fine. So,
And is there a annual report that memorializes that you publish?
Yeah, so we have that data, and at any point we can come back and do an annual report on that information. You see a number of the numbers here from our most recent one. We're wrapping up our 2014 reporting here shortly.
Might be good to distribute that to the council.
Absolutely.
Please.
Yeah, and the reason I ask these questions is the council last year was, as you know, involved in a discussion about helping to lure a major athletic company, apparel company, to the South Waterfront. And one of the things that we discussed was the E-Zone. And it sparked an interesting, more public discussion about the benefits of an E-Zone and are we getting enough in return and the like. So I think having a way to document that on a more regular basis and publish those results is helpful, because I think, as with any of these programs, there's some skepticism out there about whether they meet their goals. And if we've got a good story to tell, I would hope we do that and also share it with the council.
We can, as Andy mentioned, we can certainly share the official annual reporting on this. PDC, in their annual report, documents some of the higher level metrics and anecdotal of that as well. So there's two mechanisms for that, and we can distribute that.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Other questions for Chris and Andy? We also have Robin Dady from McKenna Metals here, so bring her up next.
Actually, I just want you to restate the difference between what we do here and what the most other places do. I think you said that in most counties in Oregon, the requirement to get this tax break is you pay 150% of the average wage in the county?
That's correct.
So that's accurate, but the other thing about the Portland Enterprise Zone program is we have the most stringent, highest level of benefits required of any of the 67 enterprise zones in the state of Oregon. So we ask the most of the E-Zone companies of all of them.
In terms of benefits?
Benefits in general.
Yeah.
In terms of benefits, was there any thought to reevaluating the benefits requirement in light of the Affordable Care Act?
So that could be something that we'll need to revisit, where we look at the benefits requirements. We haven't spent any time yet on that yet, though. No.
Yeah, good point, though. Good point. There are a couple of things, I think, at work that might cause us to reevaluate some of these. How do we tune this for the next phase? Great. Thank you both. Robin, please come up and join them. Morning.
Good morning. So I joined McKenna Metal as their controller a year ago, and they've had a great story. McKenna Metal does custom metal fabrication, and they do work for a number of retail design firms that ultimately work for companies like Nike. So a predominant portion of our business is around retail display. We also did stuff like Rip City Sign and other sports signs. So we've had a great story for being a small company. They opened shop on Northwest Nikolai, right off the Fremont Bridge, in 2008 with only a couple employees. And by middle of last year, we were right around 20 employees. So we've had steady growth during a time where the economy was definitely hurting. And so it's been a good story, but we want to continue to grow. And part of continuing to grow means we need programs like E-Zone, which we signed up for last year, to help us so that we can continue to hold on to enough cash to allow us to invest in more equipment that we need for the type of custom fabrication we do. Most of the machinery we use is very expensive. So our laser cutters and our machines that bend metal are well over $100,000 a piece. So in order to continue to grow, we need to be able to invest back in our business. And more importantly, through programs like E-Zone, it allows us to get some training funds to help us continue to train our employees. So as we grow, they can continue to grow with us. Our line of work, because it is custom fabrication, it takes a higher level of skills to really understand metal and fabricating metal. So anytime we can bring on individuals, maybe at a general laborer position, entry-level position, and give them the ability to grow with us, last year alone we promoted three employees. and two of which are now metal fabricators. It just helps not only us, but it helps the employees and it helps the economy as we continue to grow.
Thank you. Questions for Robin as well. Thank you all very much for the presentation. Anyone else want to speak on this item?
Charles Johnson signed up.
Thank you all. Robin, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and I was very glad that at the end we got one MW SEB, whatever it is, on the record. And I want you to think about your constituents and about all the constituents that were here last week, and look around on your desks there and find your equity lens, because we don't want a bunch of people of color working for Portland Mall Management and Central City Concern and Clean and Safe, sweeping around buildings full of white 25-year-old males without children doing e-commerce. So I'm very pleased with the standards that are in here as far as, and especially Dan Saltzman's suggestion that nobody connected to any of these programs should be making less than $15 an hour. But we need to do better at making that connection downtown. I don't know how many square feet Portland Community College rents or owns a few blocks from here. Is my mic on? And this is not just about economic opportunity for a few clever capitalists who can read the tax crediting code, but we need to really make sure that this connects to what we were talking about before when the Arts Council was here and their excellent equity statement, and about STEAM, science, technology, education, arts, and math, because the woman who just spoke, her business is engaged in graphic art and design, so it's not just about geeks, it's also about artists. And I hope that you'll keep a close eye on the PDC as the staff diversifies there, and we'll be able to turn this into not just economic activity, but multicultural activity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks. Anyone else? Council questions, comments?
So, yeah, Mr. Mayor, I do feel that we should make this a $15 an hour requirement for 85% of the employees after 1 year of employment. So I would offer a further resolve to the resolution to say that we would change Exhibit A to read 85% of basic wages must exceed $15 an hour after 1 year of employment.
Okay, so that's a motion. Is there a second? So, Dan, I won't.
Second.
Okay, I won't support that now, but I am interested in looking at the question of wages. I don't think we should do it on the fly, but I think we also have to look at the whole package that we're requiring of these employers. It's not just the wages. It's also a huge commitment to benefits, but I think it's a fair question, given the direction that we as a council have on the wage issue, that we should try to be both aggressive and consistent in a good economy of trying to raise wages. But again, what the total package that we're requiring from these employers in order to get these benefits is pretty significant. So I don't want to blow past that in our interest in the wage issue. So my request would be that we not support your amendment today, though we'll take a vote on it here momentarily. But
I would just say that, you know, we're offering substantial benefits, both in terms of property tax abatements and income tax credits. And I do appreciate the richness of the requirements on the employers of these packages, and I appreciate the work you have done and the PDC has done, but the current policy of 85% earning $13.50 after 1 year, I mean, $15 an hour, I think, is not that much more. And I think, you know, I would hazard to guess that many of these employees, the McKenna Metals, are easily exceeding $15 an hour with the skills that they have, and I think it's consistent with the policy discussion we had last week, that we try to, you know, increase, bump it up every time we get a chance. And this seems like, to me, a fair part of this package. But I would urge a yes vote.
Commissioner, I just wanted to say that I agree with you, your instinct. I also think the mayor might have a fair point that we maybe shouldn't do this on the fly. I wasn't really aware of this program until a few days ago. And the modifications that are being made to the program today strike me as reasonable modifications. But I do have a concern about the wage levels. And in fact, I mean, I was until my staff talked me out of it yesterday, pointing out we shouldn't do this on the fly, I was inclined to come forward today with an amendment saying that the median wage has to be $25 an hour and 85% have to make at least 18. Because I think, I mean, we are talking about a pretty big tax break, and I tend to be skeptical of tax breaks for economic development to begin with. However, if we were talking about a tax break for companies that pay $25 an hour to provide childcare, those sound like pretty darn good companies to have in town. But what we have here is a policy where, on its face, you could pay 85% of your employees exactly $14 an hour and 15% less than that and still get a tax break. And as you just said, I think that that probably applies to zero of the companies actually taking advantage of it. But on its face, that could be the result. So I would suggest that even if we don't approve your amendment today, we take a look at this over the next couple of months, and either, and I would like to for a discussion with the PDC and hear more of the justification for a program which results in our actually requiring arguably less of our employers in terms of wages than other counties do. But I would suggest that regardless of what we do today, we look at this in some more depth over the next couple of months.
And Mayor, let me just add one comment. I appreciate Dan raising the issue. I agree with your mayor with your view on this. But actually, if we're going to start looking at the myriad ways in which we subsidize, incentivize, or otherwise encourage activity, I'd like to start with having a comprehensive understanding of all those programs. I suspect that the majority of them actually are administered through the Housing Bureau, but I'd like to understand the range of them and then understand our legal authority to set those kinds of requirements, and then what the impact would be on the people that we are contracting with. And I'd like to have all that information before I start doing it as a series of one-offs. Okay.
All right, further discussion on the motion? No one stick a roll call on the motion, and then we'll move on to the resolution itself.
Fritz.
So the resolution that we passed last week was not binding city policy, and that was one reason that I supported it. In looking at it since then, it's very clear that we've made some significant errors in adopting that resolution last week, and that we need to look very carefully and figure out how much is this going to cost and how is it going to affect low-income workers. What we did last week is quite likely to have the effect of reducing hours for low-income workers, so they not only will not be getting $15 an hour, but they also will not be having full-time work anymore. And so that's we need to revisit what we did last week. We should not be making changes on something which is binding city policy with absolutely no investigation as to the potential impacts on the companies, on the program, and on the balance sheet. So I can't support this amendment. No.
Fish.
No.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm quite convinced that no company would walk away from this program, which is quite generous in terms of property tax abatements and income tax credits for a modest increase in the minimum wage of required after 1 year of employment for 85% of the employees of $15 an hour. That's a modest increase from $13.50. And I also believe many of these companies, being highly skilled as they are already exceeding that. But I think it's good that we search out opportunities on the fly or not to make sure that we are paying living wages, or that these companies are paying living wages, and $15 an hour, you know, barely meets that requirement of living wage, but it is better than the present requirement, so I vote aye.
Nofik?
I take Commissioner Fritz's implied point that we as a city don't pay all of our employees $15 an hour, but that's something that I feel guilty about, and I think we all do. It's not something that we want to be patted on the back for. And the idea that we've got a policy that gives a rather large tax break to companies that might pay a significant portion of their workforce, actually could pay all of their workforce less than $15 an hour, is something that I have a hard time contemplating. And again, I think that we should have a more comprehensive look at this policy later on. But based with Commissioner Saltzman's motion, I think that I can't imagine not voting aye. Aye.
Hales.
Well, Commissioner Saltzman, I appreciate you raising this issue, and I'm going to vote no on the motion, but that doesn't mean that I just want to sweep this issue away. We are going to be getting the final version of that PDC strategic plan in front of us within a couple months. And as you may remember, I said when we started that strategic planning process that I think PDC has to have three missions. One's to build the city, the third is to create, second is to create jobs, and the third is to share prosperity. And I do believe that we should try to use the situation of this economy to create a race to the middle instead of a race to the bottom. So I think we all share that value, and I'm very interested in digging into some of the details of how this might work if we were to raise the wage requirement in addition to the benefits requirements. I want to understand a little better the diversity of the employment that we're talking about. I've seen some of these companies. I was at Leatherman Tool last week, and it's just shocking when you look out on the floor there on two levels. One is the amazing amount of capital investment that they're pouring into that company in terms of robotics and equipment. And then two is the diversity of the workforce. And in Bridgetown Natural Foods, same thing, very high-tech company that's creating contract manufacturing granola bars and such. Their biggest problem on the floor of that business is communication, because they have so many different languages spoken that if the wrong lead worker is not there that day, there's a crew that the boss has a hard time communicating with. And they're growing. They've gone from, what, 25 employees to 240 in 5 years. So, you know, this program appears to be part of a successful set of strategies that's creating high-value manufacturing employment or craft employment like McKenna Metals here. So I like what we've got going on. I don't think it's a giveaway. And in fact, in most cases, it's local businesses rather than national corporations that are benefiting from this. So I think properly tuned, this is an incentive that fits our values. But I am interested in the wage issue. I'm glad you've raised it. You've got my commitment that we'll spend that time looking at that issue some more between now and when the final version of the PDC strategic plan comes back to us, I think, in June or July, so not that long from now. But for now, I'll say no to your motion, but more later. Okay, now let's take a roll call on the resolution itself, please.
Fritz?
I believe the enterprise zones are one of the best economic development tools that we have as a city. I'm very appreciative of the report, and thank you for being here to testify, Robin. I'm glad your business is doing so well. And very happy to support these changes. I believe it'll make it even better. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Thank you, PDC, and thank you, Robin, for being here. And I appreciate these changes, and they're in a good direction, and I appreciate the mayor's commitment to take a look at this $15 an hour issue as we come back to the PDC strategy?
Yeah, strategic plan.
Right. Strategic plan. Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see this growth in the manufacturing and craft sector in the city. I mean, the part of that conventional wisdom that's wrong, you know, that all the prosperity was going to the suburbs. Well, part of the conventional wisdom that's wrong is that all high-value manufacturing is moving overseas. I mean, we can sometimes fall victim to this caricature picture of Portland that's all software and restaurants, you know, and they're great. But there's a huge amount of high-value handwork that's done in our city, and Robin's business is one of them. And the more I see of that, and the more I see of its growth, the more optimistic I am that we're in a good place. So it's programs like this that hopefully will help us build on that strength in a time of, I think, longer-term economic growth, not a bubble, but a trend. So this is a great tool. It's being used well. I appreciate the staff at PDC for the work you do, and look forward to returning to this discussion soon. Thank you.
Aye.